saving. A pilgrimage which all people of faith should engage in. But something weird happened, because there were no planes, there were no trains, there were no automobiles. He actually walked there. So from northern Germany, he made the trip over several weeks, walking down to Rome. Now, it was no big deal, because in every single major area, there was a monastery. So that's what they did. They traveled from monastery to monastery, making their way down to Rome. And he started noticing something. In the monasteries in his neck of the woods, he could ask questions of theology and faith, and he could have, you know, wonderful conversations on different passages of scripture or other books in the Bible, and the monks were engaged. They were energized. But the closer he got to Rome, more and more he started seeing with his own eyes the corruption that people like Marsiglio and others had been talking about for 200 years. The monasteries closer to Rome were luxurious. You know, the monks didn't wear simple woolen, dirty brown robes. They wore fine silks. The rectors had fur lining in them. They had comfortable beds. They ate 5-course meals. They actually had, you know, gold and silver, silverware in plates. Instead of taking the money that people donated to the monasteries and giving it back to the community, the monks were basically putting in their pockets and living large. He saw some monasteries that had brothels on them. He saw that the monks, they had no interest in spiritual things. They were just like businessmen. They were focused on making money and profit. Then, when he got to Rome, it was even worse. It was even worse, I think. No, actually, I know what comes next. I'm going to wait. Rome, which was supposed to be God's shining city on earth, was nothing but a den of iniquity. Prostitutes, little bastard children, thieves, Ponzi schemes. The priests were drinking and whoring. He saw with his own eyes the buying and selling of church offices. Any time a person went to a priest to ask for comfort, first thing the priest did was put their hand out. Fees were charged. You want to get your baby baptized? Pay me money. Do you want me to pray for the soul of your elderly parents? Give me money. Everything was about money. And even worse was the little vendor carts that were set up all over the city selling supposed holy relics. Bones of martyrs, vials of blood that came from Christ himself, pieces of the true cross, anything you could imagine was for sale. Ironically, a contemporary of Luther on a travel to Rome, he was an English noble, wrote famously that if he had enough money and he was able to buy all of the pieces of the true cross that were on sale in Rome, he could have built the world's largest navy. Jesus was a big figure, but I don't think he was that big. But the accuracy, the truth was irrelevant. It was all about making money. So, he starts having questions of faith. He starts feeling doubt. By the way, in modern phraseology, he would be subject to depression and anxiety. So to cure his consciousness, he did what thousands of pilgrimages did. He would attempt to walk what was known as the path of redemption. In Rome, near St. Peter's Basilica, there was a large staircase that supposedly came from the palace where Pontius Pilate lived in Jerusalem. So, if you paid for the privilege, you could go up the stairs on your knees. And if you said the proper prayers, you could earn yourself an indulgence equal to 1,000 years of penance. So you could wipe out, say, 1,000 years of being in limbo or one of the rings of hell. Well, Luther believed, so he decided to try. He gets down on his knees, and every single step, he goes up one, and he says the proper prayers, according to the book, is what he's supposed to say. And then he went to the next stair, and the next stair, and the next stair. About midway through, a voice spoke to Luther that said simply this: the just shall live by faith. The just shall live by faith. And then it struck him like a lightning bolt. As if in a daze, he stood up, which you're not supposed to do, turned around, and walked down the stairs. And according to his biographers, he continued to walk all the way back to Germany, foregoing his opportunity to meet with the Pope. He had a complete mental breakdown. He would actually be locked up in an insane asylum for almost a year because his faith in the church was completely shattered. But a seed began growing inside. And he started realizing, this little word right there, this was the solution. Faith. After he was released from the institution, he eventually would become regrounded. He left the monastery, and that's when he began teaching. He became a professor of scripture. And he started trying to push his students to live their lives according to the actual words of Scripture. But then, early in 1517, the corruption that he saw in Rome traveled to Wittenberg. We all know what indulgences are, right? We remember what indulgences are? That little scrap of paper blessed by the Pope, in which the Pope supposedly imbues it with surplus grace. The church, with the Babylonian captivity, began selling them, very profitable. And the peddlers that were sent around, the quote-unquote salesmen, promised if you pay, you'll get a release from purgatory. So what people started doing is they started using all the money they had to buy as many of these scraps of paper as they could afford. Because they weren't just worried about them. What about grandma and grandpa who may be down in purgatory for 10,000 years? Well, I'll buy enough indulgences and maybe I can help them out. Or what about because infant mortality was so high? Maybe I should, you know, buy some indulgences for the souls of my dead baby. Because again, death was everywhere. So people literally began taking any money that they had, whatever, the peddlers would come around and buy up as many scraps of paper as they could afford. And of course, this was all done on the orders of a pope. Pope Leo X. Upon becoming pope in 1510, Pope Leo decided to fund the reconstruction of that building down below, St. Peter's Basilica. Built supposedly on the site that St. Peter himself was crucified upside down on a cross. Well, the original basilica was built when the Roman Emperor Constantine was around, so in the 4th century, and it was falling apart. It was on the verge of complete collapse. So beginning with Alexander VI, that corrupt pope, but continuing during the pontificate of Leo X, they knocked the original building down and they started building a new one. And if you ever go have a chance to go to Rome, add that to your sightseeing list. St. Peter's Basilica is absolutely stunning. But it was financed through indulgences. Well, the peddler assigned to go to Wartburg was one of the most successful of all the peddlers in all of Europe. A man by the name of John Tetzel. See, Tetzel was clever. He came up with a mechanism that really, really hit home. It was a box. It was a little box. So what the idea was simple. When you went up to the table, Tetzel would not take your money. Instead, what he would do is he would tell you to drop it in the slot. And he would use these words. As soon as the goal in the basin rings. Sorry, say this again. As soon as gold in the basin rings, right then the soul to heaven springs. He wouldn't take silver coins. No, 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 no. He only took gold coins. And if you put your gold coin in and you heard a bing, you didn't have to wait to go to church with the indulgence to cash it in. No, 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 no. If you put gold in and you heard a bell ring, that signified the person whose soul you were trying to save was released and would ascend into heaven. Here's the thing. There was a little lever on it. Right? It was a little lever. And what it did was it controlled a little slide. So if you walked up and you had a silver coin and that's all you had, you could put your coin in there, but it didn't cause the bell to ring. Because he would push it and the slide would move so the coin would drop straight in. But if he saw you had a gold coin, he would hit the button. The ramp would go into place, your coin would go down, and hanging at the bottom of the ramp was a bell. So every gold coin heard the ring. He made bank. He made bank. Well, the problem is, Luther, and it's actually depicted in a movie, I think it was made like 2002, 2003, called Luther. On the day when Tetzel came in, he saw Tetzel setting up in the shop and he was like, okay, whatever. Didn't really think much of it. But there was a local homeless woman who was begging on the streets looking for coins so she could buy bread for her babies. So out of compassion, because again, that's what Christians, we're charitable. He gave the woman, the only coin he had happened to be a gold coin. And he basically told her, look, take this, go get an apartment or a room in the hotel or in the inn and get some food. And you should have enough food for several days. Well, Tetzel sets up. He starts doing this. People watch and they see the silver coins, no ring, gold coins ring. And guess what she decides to do? She walks over and she puts the coin in. Bing! She saved the soul of his father, her father. Of course, at the expense of putting food in all her baby's bellies. Well, Luther sees this, he loses his shit. He gets in Tetzel's face, confronts him. At some point, they start shoving. The box and the table flip over. The box breaks. And everybody sees the button, the slide, the mechanism. It was a combination of what he saw with his own eyes in Rome, this epiphany, and then seeing that the corruption of the church has no bounds that drove Luther to make a stand. And by the way, he knew the consequences. He knew what the church would do to him, but he didn't care because he had courage. He wasn't an actor or an actress on TV reading the scripted lines, pretending to be tough and cool and all the rest. And by the way, his arguments were undeniable. Because he didn't just say his opinion. He had been reading all of the writings that came out of the conciliarist movement. He had been reading Erasmus and all the rest. And he took all those criticisms and blended it all together. And his message was undeniable. Because he based it on the actual words of Scripture. First book of the Romans, verses 16 and 17. It says the following, and I quote, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel, because it is the power of God that brings salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jew, then to the Gentile. For in the gospel, the righteousness of God is revealed, a righteousness that is by faith from first to last. Just as it is written, the righteous will live by faith." That's the key. That's the key. Five letter word. F-A-I-T-H. As he said in his book, Two Kinds of Righteousness, and I quote, "It was at that moment that I grasped that the justice of God is that righteousness by which, through grace and sheer mercy, God justifies us through faith. At that point, I felt myself to be reborn and to have gone through the open doors into paradise." If you believe in God and you believe in Jesus and you believe there's a heaven and there's a hell, that's enough. Because if you believe in all that, you're not going to do what's wrong. You're not going to sin. Because you know what the consequences are. Thus, if you do righteous behavior, that's your justification. Why are you doing it? Because I believe. Why are you not doing the sin? Because I believe. That's enough. You don't have to go and do all of these works. You don't have to give one third of every penny that you earn. You don't have to spend all your time constantly cowering in fear. Because at the end of the day, you'll always do what's right. Because you believe. And by the way, that's the same that's true in all religions. Regardless of why you worship or you pray. If you believe, you will always do what is right. Where do people get in trouble? Well, they don't follow their faith. And that's what in the core of the 95 Theses are. And there are excerpts in it in the reader. In it, Luther maps out 95 questions. Questions essentially challenging the status quo. But at the end, there's three main points. The first is, the Pope can't give salvation. A Pope can't save you. No little scrap of paper is going to save you if you commit sin. Why? Well, because two. Luther essentially states there is no freedom from penalty. If God says, thou shall not, and you do exactly what God says not to do, you think a scrap of piece of paper that you pay a coin for is going to have God forgive you? God literally is laying down the law. He tells you the thou shalls and the thou shall nots. There's no forgiveness from that. You did wrong. You're going to be punished. But the third main theme in the 95 Theses is very simple. If you are true, there's no need for forgiveness. If you live by the faith, you'll always do what's right. Now, here's the amazing thing. This basically means there is no need for a church. If you live by Scripture, if you follow the thou shalls and the thou shall nots, you don't need to go to church. You don't need to obey some guy in a pointy hat who sits on a gilded throne. Because at the end of the day, you'll always do what's right. You know, by the way, talk about wildfire. Thanks to the fact that the printing press, which was made 60 years before, and as we mentioned, Gutenberg didn't have a patent on it, so there were copies of the printing press all over Europe. The moment people in monasteries started talking about the 95 Theses, copies were being made, and they began being printed in different languages, and they were circulated all across the continent. And it was the perfect message. For the activists that were, you know, championing going against the corruption, well, there you go. There's your sword. That's the tool you're going to use. For those people who simply just wanted to make faith easier, there you go. There's your tool. The problem is once people started reading it, they started having their own opinion. Have you ever read a book when you were in school, and then you're sitting there with your teacher, and you're having a discussion of the book, and people interpret the book different than you did? That's the brilliance of human beings. We can sit and watch the same thing together, but we'll pick up different aspects of it. So what started happening is it wasn't just a universal, everyone agrees with Luther. There were some people who said, well, I kind of agree with this, but I disagree with that. And different degrees started appearing. But at the end of the day, people started having conversations, discussions, and asking more questions. It was a snowball. And by the way, Luther knew the consequences. He knew what happened to Wycliffe after he died. He knew what happened to Huss. He knew what was going on all around the continent. Witch hunts, people were being burned at the stake. He knew it all. But he wasn't afraid. He put his name on it. He didn't write this anonymously. Why? He was more afraid for his eternal soul. He knew if he managed to stay with the lie, lying is a sin, that if he didn't make a stand, that would result in his damnation. So even if he died after saying his minds, it was worth it. Because he knew his path would take him up. Because he was interpreting God's actual message. And he didn't stop. That's the amazing thing. He didn't stop. He kept writing and writing and writing. And he kept adding ideas. In his books, he started challenging the way things were. And he started arguing on how they ought to be. How they should be. You know, that we, if we live in like a shitty house and it's dirty and we don't want to live in filth, that all we need to do is clean the house. You know, something is simple. If you want a better life, then make a better life. He rejected all of the good works of the church. There's no need to go and, you know, do 15 All Fathers and, you know, do the rosary beads for 9 hours on you. There's none of that. No amount of money, no amount of things you're going to do is going to win forgiveness for your sin. He also would go so far as to say that priests are not necessary. That any person, even women, could be their own priests. He encouraged people to learn how to read and write, and then read the Bible for yourself. He also denied the infallibility. What does that word mean? Infallibility. No. If someone is infallible, that means they believe they are perfect, that they don't make mistakes. Well, Luther argued, every single pope who has ever claimed the title was born a man. You know what that means? He had to learn how to walk. He had to learn how to talk. He fell, stumbled. He farts. He does poo-poos and pee-pees. Sometimes he gets diarrhea if he has too much Mexican food. If he drinks too much, he'll have hangovers. He was one of the first people to actually contend that the Pope is just a human being. And all human beings make mistakes. No one is perfect. The only perfect person is God. That's it. Why? It says so in Scripture. Now, one of the most amazing things is, from the point he made his stand, he would actually live almost for another 30 years. He died of natural causes. And the most amazing thing was the fact that he was excommunicated. Leo X called for his arrest, called for a trial on heresy, but he managed to avoid capture. He also did something that priests are not supposed to do. He got married. His wife was a former nun, Catherine. And they had 6 kids. But to ensure that his ideas would be preserved, he decided to go out and found his own church. He created the first Protestant church, known today as the Lutheran Church. He took Textus Receptus, the Greek, and translated it into German, making the first German Bible, so that way the people in Germany could could read Scripture to see that he wasn't making it up. And he wrote and wrote and wrote. In total, he would write over 200 books. At the time he died, it's estimated that there were 700,000 copies of the 95 Theses in circulation, making it one of the most widely printed book of his day. But Luther also kind of became fanatical and cranky in his old age. And by the time he died, he was not only attacking Catholics, but he began attacking other Protestants as well as Jews. And I should mention that when the Nazis came to power, they trumpeted Luther's words on Jews as part of their propaganda, going so far as to implying that they are proof of the Antichrist. Questions? All right, so let's finish up with Luther. We'll call it a day. Why did Luther succeed? Well, Luther is extraordinary, and we go to 1040, right? Yeah, okay, good. Thank you. That's what I thought. I got to get my brain back on our schedule. All right, why did Luther succeed? Well, very simple. Unlike other people who were writing on these same ideas, most of those other works were geared towards specific classes. Just the peasants, or just the nobles, or just the clergy. Luther's message applied to all classes. Both genders. People, whether you're in Germany, or Spain, or England, or Italy. It wasn't localized, it was universal. And it was simple. You didn't need to have a PhD to interpret his ideas. He spoke in a basic of enough level. I mean, there was complexity to it. But it's understandable that if you understand how grammar works, then you basically could understand what Luther's trying to say. You know, you didn't need a decoder ring to interpret what he was saying. So as a result, people who were high-born and low-born could find understanding in what he was trying to say. Again, it's not that hard. F-A-I-T-H. That's as easy as you can get. You know, no spending 10 years going to CCD and having to go to church, you know, every single weekend, plus all the holy days of obligation in between and giving one-third of your wealth to the church, all of that stuff that the church tells you you're supposed to do. You didn't have to do all that. F-A-I-T-H. That's it. Simple. Simple. And its simplicity is what makes it revolutionary. On one hand, he says things that everybody already knew. Everybody knew the church was corrupt. That would be me like saying, hey, did you know that politicians are corrupt? Or that used car salesmen are sleazy? And it's like, ooh, it's not shocking. Everybody knows this. But it's the simplicity that makes it so revolutionary, because Luther wasn't trying to stroke people's egos. He wasn't trying to shield people from the truth. He just said it as it was. All he was talking about was going back to Christ's original intent. What does it say in Scripture? That's what you should do. It's easy. It's all you got to do. Follow the damn directions. But ironically, because of its simplicity, it would also become a weapon. Because as we're going to see, it would become political.
And that's also what happens. So let's think, again, I try not to offend, but again, I know your time on earth has been limited, so the examples that I can use are very rare. Like, I can't talk about something that happened when I was a kid in the 70s. You wouldn't get it. But let's use what happened during the summer of 2020 after George Floyd's death and all of the protests and all of the marches that occurred. If you took a step back and you observed what happened in reaction to that, it became politicized. And there were politicians who jumped in to score political points. And they would use it as a weapon to bludgeon their political opponents. You know, it's a sad story. What happened? A guy died. It's pretty sad. But they raised him to the level of martyrdom. And politicians use this weapon for gain. And there were people who pocketed money off of it. I don't know if you heard about what happened to all of the leaders of the group that was called BLM. But of the millions and millions of dollars and donations they received, they didn't give them out to help any single person. They bought multiple mansions. They bought fancy cars. They embezzled it all. The message was right, but it was corrupted. The same thing would happen with Luther. His message was right. But soon politicians, nobles, princes would get into it and people tried making money off of it. And no one could stop them. Now, Luther should have died. Luther should have gone the way of Jan Hus. Somebody who you never heard of before, historically significant, but was all but forgotten. And I'll tell you, if there never was a Martin Luther and there never was a Protestant Reformation, you would never know who Jan Hus was. His name would not be mentioned in any books. But when Luther appeared, the people that could have erased him from history did not. So his timing was not only perfect, but was lucky. As we're going to see, the secular ruler in Germany, a man by the name of Charles V, he was the most powerful monarch in European history of all times. Charles, at the age of 16, became king of Spain. He was the grandson of Ferdinand and Isabella. So Spain at that time had planted the flag in the New World. So all of the gold and all of the silver and all of the gems that began coming over to Spain from the New World, that went into his pocketbook. Then 3 years later, he inherited the realm of his father. He became king of Austria and would be elevated to be Holy Roman Emperor. So at 19 years old, the secular ruler who could have killed Luther was ruling over 2,000 nobles, 66 city-states, 100 kings, 30 princes, 70 bishoprics. And his empire stretched from northern Germany all the way across the Atlantic Ocean. Do you think this kid had time to worry about one little monk that was writing some books in some northern German city? And then what about the church? Well, truth be told, the church was more afraid of another schism. Because all of the things that Luther talked about was covered during the ecclesiastical breakdown and the conciliarist movement. The church knew what Luther was saying was the truth. But they knew if they came on too strong, they would be hypocrites. So instead, they decided initially to engage in passive resistance. They declared him to be a heretic. They sent inquisitors out to go find him. But eventually, after Leo X left the pontificate, because he exited life, Luther was just ignored, hoping he would go away. And that, of course, allowed him to write more and more and more. So, Luther succeeded for all of the above. Perfect message, right timing, a whole bunch of luck. But in the end, he would change the course of Western civilization. Boom! That's a good way to end it. It's almost like I scripted it. I'm not a Holly Weird actor. I just speak off the top of my head. All right, so, questions? All right, well, we're going to come back. We're going to see some of the other movements that would be inspired by Luther's actions. We're going to see what happens when another monk starts a movement. We're going to see what happens when a lawyer starts a movement. Then we're going to see what happens when a king starts a movement. Welcome back. We'll see you in 2 days.